from, I guess it's about six lines on the bottom or so. Ba'amine. Okay, so the Gemara says on the bottom of Chav Gimel, Ba'amine Rav Yosef Berei de Rav Nechunyam Rav Yehuda. Mahu sheyaniach adam tefilav tachas marashosav. So the Gemara shaila is, can a person take his tefillin and put them underneath his head? So the Gemara explains, tachas margiloso lo kami bayali shenoeg bahen minag bizayim. The Gemara says that it's obvious you can't put tefillin underneath your feet because that's clearly a bizayah to the tefillin. Kikami bayali tachas marashosav mai. The shaila is, what about putting tefillin underneath your head? Is that somehow less of a bizayah? So the Gemara explains, Amar le, hachi amar Shmuel, mutter afilu ishto imo. Says Shmuel that even if one is sleeping in bed with his wife, he's still permitted to put tefillin underneath his head. So the Gemara asks, meisve, lo yaniach adam tefilav tachas margilosav, mipnesha noeg bohem derech bizayon, avol manicha tachas marashosav, vimhaisa ishto imo aser. So comes the brisa and says that the only time that it's mutter to put tefillin underneath your head is assuming that your wife is not in bed with you. It sounds like if she is, then it's going to be a problem. Then the brisa continues, hayamakum shagavoa gimotfachim o namoch gimotfachim mutter. Then this last point here is kind of parenthetical. The brisa just says, and it happens to be if you have an area that's either above three tefachim from the bed or beneath three tefachim from the bed, then it's mutter to put the tefillin there. But the point, yeah, correct. But the point is, as the Gemara says, tiyufta de Shmuel tiyufta. You see from this brisa clearly refutes the position of Shmuel, because Shmuel says that it's mutter to put tefillin underneath your head even if your wife is in bed. This brisa says, assuming that you don't have this, you know, three tefach thing, that the Gemara assumes that it's going to be a problem. Okay, we're gonna so it's the simple explanation of the Gemara is that the tefillin are exposed. We're gonna talk about that a little bit later and on Chav Dalet. We'll get to that point in a second. So the Gemara just refuted Shmuel, and yet the Gemara says Amar Rava Afal Gav Desanya Tiyufta De Shmuel Hilchasav Kivasei. This is like a very strange thing. We don't find this too often in Gemara, where the Gemara outright rejects an opinion but says that we still follow that opinion anyway. La Halacha. Gemara says even though Shmuel was for some reason rejected, we nonetheless follow Shmuel. Meaning practically, what that means is that it's permissible to put tefillin underneath your bed even if your wife is in bed with you. So the Gemara says, "My time. What's the reason that we're gonna bring Shmuel's opinion back to life?" So says the Gemara, "Kolina turinu tfei adif." The Gemara says that because the purpose of putting tefillin underneath your head is for protection, even though it comes at the expense of some sort of a bizayim that it's in bed together with your wife, nonetheless that's still going to be permissible. So the Gemara now wants to know just like a technical question: the hicham anachlu, where exactly under your head should you put the tefillin? So Amar Rabbi Yirmiyah, Beikar l'chases shelo keneged rosha. Rabbi Yirmiyah says you should put it, between basically the pillow and the bed, but not directly underneath your head. So put it a little bit off to the side from where your head actually is. So asks the Gemara, v'hatani Rabbi Chia manichan b'chov atachas marashosav. But Rabbi Chia says that you can put the tefillin, which sounds like directly underneath your head. The Gemara says no. The mapik le lemursha dekova levar. It means that the tefillin, the pouch in which the tefillin are residing, are bulging outwards. In other words, let's say part of the tefillin bag is under your head, but the part of the bag where the tefillin actually are kind of off to the side. That's what the Gemara assumes is mutter. And the Gemara says, Bar Kapara, tzir lehu bechilta, umapik lemursha hom levar. So Bar Kapara used to take his tefillin and tie them up in some sort of like a curtain or a canopy that was over his bed, but he made sure that the tefillin, as we said before, were kind of bulging outwards. They weren't directly underneath his head. And also, Rav Shisha bereid Rav Yidi, manach lehu asher shifa, uparis sodri ilavayu. Similarly, Rav Shisha, he would put his tefillin on a bench, but he would cover the tefillin with this handkerchief or with the cloth. Amar Rav Hamnuna bereid Rav Yosef, zimna chada hava ka'imna kameid Rav. One time I was standing in front of Rava, v'amar li, and he said to me, zil aisi li tefillin, go bring me my tefillin, v'ashkachtinu bin kar l'chesas shelo keneged rosho. And I realized, I found that his tefillin were underneath his pillow, but not in the exact position where his head was. In other words, off to the side a little bit. V'hava yadana, and I realized, diyom tila hava, that was the night that his wife went to the mikvah, uli agmuran halach l'maisuhu da'avan. And Rava was trying to teach me the halacha, namely, that we actually follow Shmuel, that even if your wife is in bed with you, you're allowed to put the tefillin there, provided that they're not directly underneath your head, as long as they're kind of off to the side a little bit. Okay, so now the Gemara asks, "Vayimine Rav Yosef Berei de Rav Nechunim Rav Yehuda, Shnayim sheyishenim b'mita."
Is this a euphemism, in other words, about having relations in bed?
Well,
a euphemism that you can have relations.
So the assumption, correct. The assumption was that it's a case of relations, and as we'll see in the next Gemara, the most people in the times of the Gemara did not sleep with clothes on. That was clear from this whole discussion, as we'll see. It's also clear from the Mishnah and the Kiddushin, which is going to be one of the reasons why the Gemara is bothered by these questions. How could you be naked in bed and have tefillin and have Sifrei Torah and things like that around? Exactly. So the Gemara wants to know, Be'imine Rav Yosef Bereid Rav Nechun Rav Yehuda, Shnayim Sheyeshenim B'mita Achas, Mahu Shezeyach Serpana V'yikra Kriyashma, V'zeyach Serpana V'yikra Kriyashma. So you have two people in bed. Again, the assumption is that neither of them are wearing clothes. So can the two of them simply turn their faces away from one another and recite Shema? So Amar Le, Hachi Amar Shmuel, Va'afilu Ishtulima. We just got through saying in the previous Gemara that according to Shmuel, even if one's wife is in bed with him, again, presumably in the case of the Gemara, neither of them are wearing clothes, nonetheless, it's mutter to keep tefillin, so presumably Shema should also be mutter. Again, we'll see the Gemara is going to question that assumption. So Maskev Lo Rav Yosef, Ishto V'lomi Boya Acher, Adarabba, Ishto Kegufo, Acher Lav Kegufo. So comes Rav Yosef and says, hang on one second, what kind of a comparison is this? In other words, we thought that, well, if it's mutter to keep tefillin or say Shema when my wife is in bed, so Kal V'chomer for someone else, so Rav Yosef says, if anything, it should be the opposite. Because at least by one's wife, you can argue that one is not going to have as inappropriate thoughts because you're already accustomed to being around your wife. Whereas if someone else is in bed, that could potentially be problematic. So the Gemara says, you're right. Mesvei, Shnayim
Sheyeshin. Why would it be problematic?
In other words, again, the assumption is, again, this case we're talking about Shema. So the halacha is that one is not permitted to recite Shema if they're having, you know, hear Hurim Rhyme, right? So the Gemara is trying to figure out, is this a din that applies specifically to one's wife, but not to others, or does it apply to one's wife and certainly to other people as well? Or does it not apply to one's wife at all, right?
Does the Havamina be that with your wife you might be attracted,
correct. So, again, the Gemara is kind of playing both sides of the coin. You could argue that, or you could also argue that, yeah, if you've been married for 50 years, so meaning you're not as likely to be aroused by being around your wife as you would be by someone else. Again, so that's the assumption the Gemara is making here. I don't know. Whatever. Yeah. What was that? Yeah. Correct. Right. Correct. That's why the tefillin were there. Right. Correct. Okay. So the Gemara now wants to know Meisvei. Shnayim sheyeshenim b'mita achas. So again, two people are sleeping in the same bed. So zeh machzer panav v'korei v'zeh machzer panav v'korei. So one braisa says if two people are in the same bed, all they do is simply face away, and then they're allowed to recite Shema. However, v'sanya achariti, we have another braisa that says hayashin b'mita. If one is in bed, ubanov ubnei beso b'tzido, and his whole family is sleeping on the side, harezel lo yikra kriya Shema ela imkein hayisatalis mafsekes b'nein. He's only permitted to recite Shema. Again, assumption is that no one is wearing clothing here. If there's some kind of a talis that's separating, some sort of mechitza separating between him and the family. However, but if the family members are ketanim, which we'll see in the Gemara is machlokes, whether that means 9 or 3 or 11 and 12, we'll get to that in a second. So then it's going to be mutter regardless of whether you have a talis there. So the Gemara explains. Bishlam alo Rav Yosef lo kashya haba ishto haba achir. El ishmo kashya. The Gemara says, so I understand that these two braisas are not contradictory according to Rav Yosef, because all you could say is one braisa is talking about one's wife, where in the case of one's wife, it's mutter, even if you're, in other words, even if there's no talis, even if there's nothing separating between you and your wife, whereas the braisa that says that you need to have a talis to separate between you and everyone else is talking about somebody else, which is going to be a problem. But according to Shmuel, as we pointed out before, doesn't distinguish between one's wife and other people, so how does he resolve these two seemingly contradictory braisos? Gemara says, you're right. Amar lecha Shmuel, l'Rav Yosef minecha, so Shmuel fights back. Shmuel says, do these two braisos really make sense according to Rav Yosef? V'hasanya hayayashin b'mita, uvanu. So again, the same case. You know, you have your family members in bed. Again, the same thing we said before. You're not allowed to say Shema unless there's some sort of a talis that's, you know, that's acting as a chatitza.
Hey, are you under the covers here?
Okay, we're gonna get to that in the next time. We'll see in a second. So Ella Mayas Lecholamir. So what must you say to resolve these two brachos? It must be Ishtola Rav Yosef Tanahi. L'dinami Tanahi. So meaning the case according to Rav Yosef of one's wife in bed about whether you're allowed to say Shema or not is subject to a machlokas tanaim. So too, the case of one's family members in bed is also subject to a machlokas. So again, at the end of the day, it's not that there's a contradiction, there's just a machlokas between two braisos about whether one is permitted to recite Shema with one's wife in bed, and separate machlokas with the rest of the family member.
Is this guy actually lying down when he's saying the Shema in bed?
Well, that's a separate question. That's a question about, that was an earlier, so back to Dr. Olive, about sitting and lying. Yeah, well, again, presumably, and again, this is gonna kind of segue into the next Gemara about different parts of the body that are exposed during Shema and brachos and things like that, which could potentially be problematic, which is going to be literally the next thing that we're about to see right now. Okay, so the Gemara says, Amar Amar, Zemach's Rapana Vikori Kriya Shema, Vahika Agavos. So the Gemara says, hang on one second. How is simply turning away from the other person okay? Your buttocks are still exposed. Why is that not a problem of Erva? So the Gemara says, no. Mesaye Lil Ravuna, Ta'am Ravuna, Agavos, Ain't Bohem Mishra. Remember, clearly this Mishnah, this Brisa supports Ravuna, who assumes that the fact that your buttocks is exposed does not constitute Erva. So, okay, so now the Gemara tries to support that contention. Lema Mesaye Lil Ravuna, Ha'isha Yosheves, the Kotzala Chalasa Aruma, Mipenesha Yeholo Lachasus. The Mishnah says in Maseches Chala that let's say a woman wants to be mafresh chala, but she happens to not, you know, be wearing clothing. So obviously, generally, you cannot make a bracha if you're not wearing clothes. So the Mishnah says, no problem. If a woman's naked, she could basically just, you know, kind of put herself into the dirt or sand and cover up her, you know, her genitals, and then she can make the bracha. But you know, however, when it comes to a man who's naked, that doesn't work, because the assumption is that the penis and the testicles are going to bulge out of the ground, and therefore he will not be properly covered to be able to make a bracha. So the Gemara says, this Mishnah, this whole story about Chala, seems to support the contention of Rav Huna that the buttocks is not an issue of Erva, because the Mishnah never mentions that as a factor. Even if the buttocks is exposed, that's not the issue. As long as the front part of the Erva is covered, that should be okay. That should allow the woman to make a bracha. Gemara says, no, that's not, the Gemara says that's not a good raya. Tirgum Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak could go and show how you put out tuchus bakarka. You could say that the case is where her buttocks was also covered in the ground, but maybe it could be that if the buttocks was not covered, then it would, you know, perhaps be a problem. So the Gemara kind of leaves us hanging as to whether the buttocks is considered erva or not. Amar Mar, im hayu banav uvnei veso ketanim mutter. We said before that if the children who are next to you in the house are ketanim, then it's mutter to say Shema, even if you don't have a talis separating between you and them. So the Gemara asks, va'ad kama, until what age are they considered ketanim? So Amar Rav Chista, tinokes bas shalosh shanim biyom echad, v'sinok ben tes shanim biyom echad. So according to Rav Chista, it's based on the age of when they're physically capable of having relations, which is 3 for a girl and 9 for a boy. Ikadamre, tinokes bas yin alav shanim biyom echad, v'sinok ben shtem es yishanim biyom echad. And according to the other opinion, it's based on, you know, the year before their bar bas mitzvah. And the Gemara says, idi v'idi ad kidei shadayim nochonu sarich tzimiyat. Both of these shiurim, you know, again, whichever position you accept, are reflecting a pasuk from Sefer Yecheskel, which we actually say in the Haggadah, where the pasuk describes how a woman's breasts develop and how, the pubic hairs, you know, start to grow in. Meaning the point is that both of these shiurim are supposed to reflect physical maturity. The only question is, what's the cutoff point of physical maturity? Those are the two opinions in the Gemara. So Amar Le Rav Kahana Le Rav Ashi. Hasam Amar Rava Afogav Desiyuf De Dishmuel Hichsa Kivasei Dishmuel Hachamai. We said in the earlier case regarding tefillin that even though Shmuel's position was actually rejected, we still paskin like Shmuel that it's mutter to have tefillin under your bed with your wife in bed with you, as long as it's not directly under your head. The question is, what about when it comes to Shema? Would Shmuel also, in other words, would we also follow Shmuel regarding Shema, or maybe not? So Amar Lei, so the response was, Atu Kulu Bechada Machta Machtinu. Are you weaving all the cases together with one thread? In other words, you can't, in other words, just because we follow Shmuel in one case, why should we follow Shmuel in the case of Shema? Elahicha de Inmar Inmar, Vehicha de Lo Inmar Lo Inmar. In other words, in the case where the Gemara says we follow Shmuel, then good, we follow Shmuel. But in the case of Shema, where the Gemara never says that, why should we assume that, you know, in the case of Shema, that we follow Shmuel? So Amar Le Rav Mari Le Rav Papa, Seyar Yotze Bevigdo Mahu. What if a person has some pubic hairs that are sticking out of his pants? Is that a problem to say Shema in front of that? So the Gemara says, Kara Ale Seyar Seyar, which is kind of like a pun where they said, you know, you're basically splitting hairs. You're being trivial about this case. And the Gemara assumes that obviously it's permissible because that doesn't really constitute Erva.
So according to this Gemara, since the Gemara is always asking about other people to be around, then one is allowed to recite Kriya Shema naked.
Well, again, assuming that you're covered in a certain way.
Certain way. A certain way. It's always about who's in the room.
Correct. Correct. Again, we haven't really. One second.
What?
We haven't. There is. One second. There is a concept called libo. There is a concept called libo roes ever, which we're going to get to later in today's daf and tomorrow's daf, which basically means is that if your chest is exposed to your erva, meaning, for example, let's say a person's wearing a flowing robe. So their entire body is technically covered, but their chest and their erva are exposed to each other. That's technically a problem. Again, it's actually a machlokas in the Gemara about that, but we paskin the libo roes erva is usher. The Gemara is going to kind of pick apart all these different scenarios of libo roes erva. What if your heel is exposed to your erva?
That's where it's going to be. Correct.
So, yeah.
That is disrespectful to the Shema or to the
tefillin?
No, the other people.
No. It's much more than that, actually, because we'll see this again, hopefully, later in today's daf. The Gemara talks about the fact that if a person's erva is exposed, it's a violation of the pasuk in Parshas Kisetze, v'haya machanecha kadosh. The halacha is that you have to be in a certain state of holiness when saying Shema, when saying brachos, and things of that nature. So, again, the Gemara has to kind of define what, you know, you know, basically what that means. So that's what this whole Gemara is essentially discussing right now. Okay, so the Gemara now continues. The Gemara says, Amar Rav Yitzchak, Tefach Be'isha Erva Lamai. So now the Gemara is going to start to rattle off a few, you know, relatively famous halachos, starting with the fact that if a tefach of a woman's erva is exposed, I'm sorry, if a tefach of a woman's skin is exposed, that constitutes erva. The question is, what are the ramifications of that? So, if the Gemara means to tell you that you're not allowed to gaze at a tefach of a woman's exposed skin, so the Gemara says, but we know that already. Ha'amar of Sheshes, Lama Mana Hakasav Tachshitin Shabachutz, Im Tachshitin Shabachim. This is a reference to, in the Psukim and Parshas Matos, after Bnei Yisrael conquered Midian, they took all the spoils of war. So the psukim list off, you know, the bracelets and the earrings, but it also lists off things like, for example, like the kumas, right, which was basically this ring that they put in their uterus. So the psukim list off, you know, basically internal jewelry and external jewelry, essentially. So why did the psukim list them all together? Lomar lecha to teach you, kol hamistakel be'etzbaktana shel isha kilu bistakel b'mkomator. If one gazes lustfully, even at the pinky of a woman, in a sexual manner, that is the equivalent of staring at her erva. So in other words, you don't need a separate halacha to teach me. Don't look at a woman's erva. At a tefach of a woman's skin that's exposed, because we know that already. So the Gemara says, so what is this halacha coming to add? Elabeishto l'kriya shema. The chiddush is that even one's own wife, where obviously this restriction of gazing does not apply, it's still not permissible to recite shema in front of a tefach of one's own wife's exposed skin that's supposed to be covered. Then the Gemara continues, Amar Rav Chisda, shok be'ir she'erva. Shenemar, gali shok ivrina haros.
Clearly
for these purposes it's not going to apply. So Rav Chisda says that a woman's exposed thigh or leg is also a problem with erva. Shenemar galisho kivrina haros uchsev tageler vasech vegam terecher pasich. Based on psukim from Yeshayahu, so the psukim say that basically when a woman's shok, when her thigh is exposed, that's considered to be that you're seeing her shame. Amar Shmuel, this is the famous one. Kol beisha erva. Shenemar ki kolich harivu marich na'aved. That a woman's voice also constitutes erva, because the pasuk in Shira Shirim compares the woman's voice to it's kolich arev. Her voice is sweet. Umarich naven. She looks beautiful. She looks pretty. So therefore, the assumption is that a woman's voice is problematic. And Amar Rav Sheshes sayer beisha erva shenemar sarich keider ha'izim. And a woman's hair is also a problem. These last two cases are obviously probably the most well known, about kol isha and about a woman covering her hair. There's a lot to discuss about these two things that are kind of a little bit off topic from this Gemara, but whatever. There's a lot to discuss about this. No. Having a mechitza in a shul is because when you daven in a set place, you need to have some sort of a separation between men and women, irrespective of if anyone's going to be staring at anyone else. These Gemaras are more like, just as an example, if you're taking, right, in other words, if let's say you're taking the subway in the middle of the summer and half the people there are not dressed appropriately, right, there's a real shaila about whether you're allowed to say brachos and shema and learn Torah or anything like that in front of exposed erva. Correct.
This is only for shema. We're only talking shema here.
Well, Shema, I mean, this Gemara is talking about Shema, but it applies to brachos, to other things like that also. Yeah, correct. What was that? The Muslim women got it right? I don't know. Well,
so my question is,
I guess for this area.
I didn't have the dakyomi in the bathtub. I want to know that.
Bathtub? What do you mean in the bathtub? Like when you're in a bathtub?
Yeah.
You're saying because it's covering you.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Actually, we're talking about that. We're
going to stay at the Hara.
We're going to actually talk about this in tomorrow's stuff, I think, where the Gemara is going to discuss the idea of, let's say, a person's in the mikvah, and then they realize that it's time to say Shema. So what do you do about that? That's very similar, Shaila.
Say the bracha.
It's a very, yeah. That, yeah, it's a very, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, well, yeah. Okay, we're gonna get to that later. It's a very similar Shema. That's a Shas Archak. It's a Shas Archak. Yeah, usually with Chachila, you're really not supposed to be learning Torah or anything like that. Well, then you should find out what? Well, we're gonna talk about that.
Sometimes.
We're gonna get to that. We'll see. Okay. Well, women going to the mikvah is also more complicated. That's also a separate thing, because you know that may depend on the fact that they have to make a bracha then. Separate.
Okay.
So the Gemara says, "I'm Rabbi Chanina. Nira isi es Rabbi shetala tefila." So I once saw that Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, he was hanging his tefillin by a peg. So ask Gemara, "Meisvei hatola tefila v'yeslo chayav." The Gemara says that if a person hangs tefillin by a peg, his life will be suspended, meaning that Hashem is gonna end his life early. And also the Gemara says, "Dorshe chamu." The people who used to darshan, you know, psukim, so they pointed to the pasuk at the end of Parshas Kisavo in the Tochacha that says that a person is going to be scared out of his wits and his life is going to be like hanging in the balance. That refers to a person who hangs his tefillin by a peg. So how could Rebbe do that? So one answer is that it depends. If you hang your tefillin by the straps, meaning you basically hang them upside down, that's a problem. Hang them right side up, so then the Gemara says that's not so bad. So the Gemara says maybe either way it's problematic. make. He told the Rebbe, the Chista told me, the Rebbe hung his tefillin while they were still in the tefillin pouch. So the Gemara says, Iachi, then my lememra. So then that's obvious. What's the issue of hanging tefillin by the pouch? Gemara says, Mahu desema tibai hanacha kesefer Torah, kamash malon. One could have argued that tefillin need to be placed. They have to be put on a table, for example, just like a sefer Torah does. So the Gemara says, no, it's not true. You're allowed to suspend your tefillin when they're in the pouch by a peg. If they're not in the pouch, so according to the first version, it's only a problem if they're upside down. According to the second version of the Gemara, even if it's right side up, that would be a problem.
Where
the Torah, correct. V'amar Rabbi Chanina, ani ra'isi es Rebbe shegihig ufihig v'nes atish v'rak u'memashmish bevigdo avlo haya misatish. So when Rabbi Yudah Hanasi was davening, so he would burp and it was burp, yawn, sneeze, spit, and then when he would have lice in his clothing, he would kind of feel around to try and kill the lice. But if his talus slipped off during davening, he would not put his talus back on. U'chashehu mefaik haya maniach yado al santero. When he would yawn in the middle of shul, he would put his hand over his mouth so it wouldn't be like a loud yawn that everyone would hear. So this first part of the braisa is kind of parenthetical. It's just mentioned because we'll get to the main part in a second. But if a person davens too loudly, that demonstrates that he's lacking in emunah. He thinks that Hashem will only hear his tefillah if he's screaming. And similarly, hamagbia kolo b'sfilaso harizem neviyeh hasheker. If a person also elevates his voice in a certain way, he's considered to be one of the neviyeh hasheker, because apparently the neviyeh sheker in the times of Tanakh used to basically yell and scream at their God. What? This is presumably Shmon Esrei. So again, that point is parenthetical. Now the main point, if a person burps or yawns during davening, he's considered to be arrogant. If a person sneezes during davening, that's a bad sign. Or it just demonstrates that he is this disgusting, not put together person. When one spits during davening, it's like you're spitting in front of the king. So how is Rebbe allowed to do all these things? So Bishlama Megai Gumifaik Lokasha Kanla Onso Kanla Ritzono. So in the case of burping and yawning, you could say, okay, Rebbe couldn't control himself, so that's why it was okay. But Ella Misatisha Misatish Kasha. What about the case of sneezing? The Gemara says, no. Misatisha Misatish Nami Lokasha, Kan Milamala Kamilamato. One is talking about sneezing, one is talking about flatulence. The Amar Rabzera, Hamilsa Ibala Liberav Hamnuna, Utkila Li Kuli Talmudai. Says there was one thing that I absorbed from learning by Rav Hamnuna, and he basically picked it up in passing, and this one halacha that he learned from Rav Hamnuna was the equivalent of all the things that he ever learned from him, which was Hamisatish Betzilaso Simen Yafelo, that if a person sneezes during davening, it's a good sign. Why is it a good sign? Kishim Shaosim Lonachas Ruach Milamata, Kachosim Lonachas Ruach Milamata. Just a person feels relieved after they sneeze, so that's a simen that that a Kodesh Baruch Hu is doing something good for him. What about the Gemara says Elo Raka Rakasha? What about the case of spitting during davening? So the Gemara says correct. It's only a simen yaf if you sneeze, not if you flatulate during davening. Correct. The Gemara says Raka Rak Nami Lokasha. The case of spitting is also not a problem, because the Gemara says Efshar Kid the Rav Yehuda to Amar Rav Yehuda Hayomid Besfila. If a person's in the middle of davening, Vin is Damin Lo Rok, and he feels the need to spit, Mavliu Betalis, he should spit into his cloak, into his talus. However, Vim Talis Noahu, let's say it's a very nice expensive talus, Mavliu Baafar Kasu, so he should spit it into his head, his handkerchief that they would put on their head. So the Gemara says Ravina have yeah exactly Ravina have a Koya Chori de Ravashi. So Ravina one time was standing behind Ravashi Nizdamin Lo Rok, where he felt the need to spit. So instead of spitting into his cloak or into his bandana, he turned backwards and spit on the floor. So Amar Leilo, Savar Lo Amar Lo Hadir Rav Yehuda Mavliu Ba'afar Kasu. So don't you hold of Rav Yehuda's statement that it's better to spit into the handkerchief and into the bandana? So Amar Leilo, no, Ana Anina Dati. I'm very finicky. This is what we know what the Gemara calls refers to. Yeah, exactly. He was in his business, so he says, if I've spit in my bandana, I'm not gonna be able to focus properly. Exactly.
It was dominating outside, obviously, not sure.
Well, not necessarily. The shul's got that dirt floor. All the houses had dirt floors back then. Yeah. Okay. Then we said Hamashmiya Kol Betfilaso Harizem Miktanelan. If a person tries to raise their voice during davening, it demonstrates a lack of emunah that they don't believe that Hashem will actually hear their tefillah. Amar Rav Huna Lo Shanu Elo Sheyachol Lechavenes Liba Balachash. That's assuming that you can have proper kavana while davening quietly. Avol Ein Yachol Lechavenes Liba Balachash Mutter. However, if you need to daven loudly in order to have kavana, then obviously it's okay. However, v'hani mili b'yachad, that's when you're davening on your own. Avol b'tzibur, asi l'mitra b'tzibura. A person cannot daven too loudly if it's going to be a tircha on the tzibur, if it's going to distract other people's davening. Rabbi Abba, hava kamishtami minei de Rav Yehuda, to have a kaboy l'meisak la'ara di Yisrael. So Rabbi Abba was trying to evade forbade Rav Yehuda because Rabbi Abba wanted to move to Eretz Yisrael, but Rav Yehuda didn't want him to go. Why not? To Amar Rav Yehuda, kol olam yibavel Eretz Yisrael over ba'aseh. Shenemar bavelo yuvu v'shama yihiyu ad yom paktiyo sam ne'um Hashem. This is a whole, this topic really appears at the end of Maseches. Well, yeah. This topic really appears primarily at the end of Maseches Ksubis about the issue about moving to Eretz Yisrael, which is a whole, correct? But here it's kind of just mentioned parenthetically where Rav Yehuda felt very strongly that until Mashiach comes, we're not allowed to move to Eretz Yisrael. So he told Rabbi Abba, you're not allowed to go to Eretz Yisrael. And Rabbi Abba, and basically Rabbi Abba said, I'm going to go anyway, but he didn't want Rabbi Yehuda to know that he was going. So before he left, Omar, he said, he says, let me go stand outside the base medrash and hear some Torah, and then, you know, I'm going to run away to Eretz Yisrael. So Azal Ashkechei Lasana Dekatani Kamei De Rabbi Yehuda. So he heard, you know, a person who was teaching a price in front of Rabbi Yehuda. Hayaomi Betfila. Then it's the Adish, and a person sneezes. Mantinat She. I'm sorry. This is a case of flatulence, right? So Mantinat She Yichla Harech B'Chol Zrim Espal. So if the person flatulated, he should wait until the odor passes, and then he should go back to, you know, and should continue davening. Ika Damrei. Hayaomi Betfila Uvikish Lehis Adish. If a person needs to flatulate while he's davening, Marchikli Achar of Dalad Amos Umesatish. He should first distance himself 4 amos from where he is, and then flatulate. Mantinat She Yichla Haruch, and then wait for the odor to go away, and then B'Chol Zrim Espal. The Omer, he should say, this is kind of like a variation of Asher Yatzar, Ribono Shel Olam Yitzar Tanu Nikavim Nikavim Chalulim Chalulim Galui V'Yadua Lefanecha Cherpasenu Uchli Masenu B'Chayenu V'Achar Yisenu Rima V'Soleya. You know that, you know, our shame in our life and the fact that we're going to, you know, turn into worms and maggots in our death. And then once you finish all that, you just basically continue from the spot that you left off in your davening.
I understand there's no netila. Don't tell you to go back and wash your hands.
Well, you didn't actually use the bathroom. You just flatulated here.
So for that, you don't have to wash.
Presumably, yeah, presumably, because also you didn't
your hands
right, exactly, right, exactly. Your hands didn't touch anything. So Amar Lei, so Rabbi Abba said about this, if I had only come to hear this one statement, which apparently he did, he said, then, you know, this would be good enough. You know, so this was the last thing that he heard before. This was the last halacha that he heard before, you know, before he ran away to Eretz Yisrael. Tana Rabbana, whatever. So, Hayah Yashin.
He was out of there.
He was out of there.
You know what the Iranian Jews do when they have gas? They say Muhammad. If you come to say Muhammad, they say Ali.
Great, okay. Where it says, Tana Rabbana, Hayah Yashin b'taliso. Okay, this touches on something that was mentioned before. If a person is sleeping in their cloak and a talis, ve'eno yachol lohotzi es roshim ne'atin, it's freezing outside. Obviously, you know, they didn't have heat back then. So, you know, the guy wants to say Shema, but he doesn't want to, you know, basically come out from under the covers. Chotzeitz b'taliso al tzavar v'korek v'yishma. All he has to do is basically cover himself up to his neck, and then he can say Shema. V'yesh omrim al libo. Some say that it's that he, in other words, he doesn't have to go all the way up to his neck. As long as his chest is covered, that's enough. V'sanakama hari libo roes. How does the Tanakama explain the fact? In other words, according to the first opinion that it's ad tzavaro, how is that mutter? Isn't that a problem of libo roes? Isn't your chest exposed to your erva? Where it says, yeah, because libo roes erva mutter. Clearly, the Tanakama, disagreed with that. He held that libo roes erva was actually not a problem. We happen to not paskin that way. We happen to paskin
your own erva.
Okay, correct. Well, yes, but also yeah, exposed to other ervas is also a problem. Yeah. Correct. Yeah, so we pass in the Liboroa as erva as a problem. Yeah, that's the main reason. That's Gartel and a belt during davening.
Okay. A lot of Hasidish stuff in this Gemara.
Well, I mean, it's real halacha.
It's just well,
right. The Eretz Yisrael thing was kind of mentioned Derech Agav. That was the main part of the Gemara. Okay. Amar Rav Huna, Rav Yochanan. Hayimahalik b'mevoas hametunafos. If a person is walking through a dirty alleyway, maniach yodo apiv the kori kriyishma. Simply put your hand over your mouth and then recite Shema. Amar le Rav Chis, ha elokim. Im Amar li Rav Yochanan befumi lo itzaisanali. In other words, he took a shua that even if he heard this statement directly from Rav Yochanan, he still wouldn't listen to him. He would still say Shema even in a dirty alleyway. So the Gemara says, Ika da Amre, Amar Rabba Bar Barchana, Amar Rav Yeshua ben Levi. So again, a guy's walking in the alleyway. Same thing. Put his hand over his mouth and say Shema. So the same thing. Even if I heard it directly from Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, I still wouldn't listen to him. So asks the Gemara, "Mi Amar Rav Huna hachi? The Amar Rav Huna Talmud Chacham Asher Lo Lamod B'Mkom Hatinofes Lefi She'ef Sher Lo Lamod Below Hear Her Torah." But the Gemara says that. But the Gemara quotes from Rav Huna that a Talmud Chacham is not allowed to stand in a dirty place because it's impossible that he's not going to think about Torah. So how could it be that he disagrees with these two formulations of the Braisa, so that he allows you to say Shema while walking through a dirty alleyway? So the Gemara says, Lo kasha, kan ba'omid kan mahalik. The Gemara says, it depends. If you stop and stand in the middle of the alleyway, that's a problem. But if you're simply passing through, so then it's mutter to say Shema.
What does tinofes mean?
Tinofes means feces. It just means things that smell. We'll see that more on tomorrow's daf. So the Gemara has, Sumi omar Rabbi Yochanan achi. V'ha'amar Rabba bar Barchanam Rabbi Yochanan. B'chol makom mutter la harher b'divrei Torah, chutz mi beis hamer, chutz mi beis hakiseh. A person is permitted to think about Torah everywhere other than a bathhouse or a bathroom. V'chi teima hachanami kan ba'omeid. What was that?
Did you be a question?
Yeah, exactly. So the Gemara says, v'chi teima hachanami kan ba'omeid kan b'mahalich. Okay. The bathhouses back then are probably different than, you know, your bathtub right. today. So the Gemara says, if you're going to tell me that the distinction is that it depends if the guy's passing by or stopping to stand there, the Gemara says, Ini, is that really true? Rabbi Yochanan was one time following Rabbi Yochanan to the mikvah. Yahava kakari kriya shema, and he was reciting shema. Kimata b'mevosa mitunafus ishtik. When he arrived at this dirty alleyway, he stopped saying shema. So Amar leh Rabbi Yochanan lehichana hadar. So once they left the alleyway, so Rabbi Yavo turned to Rabbi Yochanan and asked him, where should I continue from? So Amar Lehi said, Imsha, Hisa, Kadei, Ling, Mores, Kula, Chuzoro. If you paused long enough that you could have finished the entire Shema, you have to start from the beginning. So clearly, the fact that Rabbi Yochanan didn't give Rabbi Yavo Musar for stopping to say Shema would seem to prove that you're allowed to say Shema in the dirty alley. But the Gemara says, no, that's not true. Hachi Kamar, this is what Rabbi Yochanan meant. Lididi Losirle, he says, in other words, I deny this whole thing. I hold that you are allowed to say Shema in a dirty alley. But Lididach, the Sfirlecha, Imsha, Hisa, Kadei, Ling, Mores, Kula. In other words, according to you, who hold that you're not allowed to say Shema in a dirty alleyway, then if you pause long enough that you could have finished the whole thing, then you have to go back to the beginning. But Rabbi Yochanan himself denied this whole halacha. Then the Gemara says, Tanya kivasei deravuna, Tanya kivasei derav chist. Tanya kivasei deravuna, we have a brisa that supports Ravuna. Hamahalich b'mevos amitunafos maniach yadu apiv yikar kriyashma. That's pretty much explicitly what we said before. I'm walking through a dirty alleyway, put my hand over my mouth, and then say Shema. Tanya kivasei derav chist. Hayamahalich b'mevos amitunafos lo yikar kriyashma. According to this other braisa, you're not allowed to say Shema at all if you're walking through a dirty alleyway. The lo'od, ela she'im hayakore yuva posek. And moreover, if you're in the middle of Shema, you have to stop what you're doing. Lo pasak mai, what if you didn't stop Shema while walking in a dirty alleyway? Amar of Mesha bar berei de Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Allah ha'kasav omer, v'gam ani nasati lohem chukim lo tovim, u'mishpatim lo yechivahem. So the pasak in Yirmiyahu basically says that it's a terrible thing, that if you say Shema in a dirty alleyway, so the Gemara says that, you know, that Hashem says about you that you're practicing laws that are not good.
Zevach
Rishayim Toeva, you mean?
Yeah.
So Zevach, okay, that's actually a good question. Zevach Rishayim Toeva is using the Gemara but referring to a person who has to go to the bathroom and you know, basically daven's while having to go to the bathroom. Here, this is more, correct. This is more, this right, exactly. This is more external. This is more, right, exactly. This is more external. Rabbi Asi Amar, Hoy Moshcheha Avon Mechav Lehashav. He quotes a different pasuk from Yeshayo that says, woe to the people who are bound by cords of sin. Ravada Barav Amar Mehacha, Kidvar Hashem Baza. The person is basically degrading the word of Hashem if he says Shema while walking in a dirty alleyway. The Pasak Maschara, what's your reward if you don't say Shema in a dirty alleyway? Rabbi Avo, Olav HaKosav Omer, Uvadavar HaZet, HaRichu Yamin. Basically, you're promised HaRichu Yamin. Amar Rav Huna, Haisa Taliso Chaguro Lo Amasnav, Mutter Likro Krishma. If your cloak is basically, if you have a belt basically around your loins while wearing a cloak, so again, that's basically, you know, separating between your chest and your erva, then you're allowed to say Shema. Tani Nami Hachi, Haisa Taliso Shal Beged, Vishal Or, Vishal Sak, Chagura Amasnav, Mutter Likro Krishma. Again, if you have this garment that's made out of either leather or sackcloth or whatever it is, you know, so that acts as a valid katita to allow you to say Shema. Abul Tfila Chicha says, however, when it comes to Shmona Esrei, it has to actually cover your chest. If a person accidentally walks into a bathroom while wearing tefillin, a person has to simply put his hands over his tefillin until he finishes what seems to be finishing davening. So Gemara says, how could you possibly daven the whole thing in the bathroom with your tefillin on? Gemara says, no. In other words, you have to wait for the first flow of, you know, for the first thing of feces to go away. So the Gemara says, why don't you just stop what he's doing, you know, leave the bathroom and then go out to the bathroom after? Gemara says, no. Mishum der mishum again. The Sani Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel Omer Amar Hachozer Maybe as Adam Lidei Hadroka Until Hachozer Maybe as Adam Lidei Yerakom. Basically, if a person holds back feces, it's going to lead to some sort of a disease called dropsy. If you hold back urine, it's going to lead to jaundice. So, in other words, because there's actually medical dangers with holding this in, you don't have a choice. You have to use the bathroom. And once you finish that, once you get over the medical issue, then you could finish, finish diving afterwards.
Yeah. Let me just.